This is the Internet's Worst Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Loki S. Jarson. Over there is my co-host and friend, Joe Stizzy. Stizzy, how's it going?
I'm good. I don't have a middle initial to my Internet name.
Well, I've always joked that my middle initial stands for space. So it's like Loki Space Jarson.
That's good. Maybe I'll have to think of one here.
Captain.
Joe Captain Stizzy. I like it.
It's been a bit since we've had a show. Let's do one quick update from the last time. We talked about Steam's new Steam machine, the Steam box, the Gabe box, whatever you want to call it. We talked about like specs and ideas and all that stuff. I think we both speculated the price should be, if they want to sell it, if they want this to be a quote-unquote console killer, it needs to be about $500 to $600, right?
Yeah, I think that's where we landed.
Apparently, that's not going to be the case in an update from the story. Steam has all but said, we don't want to sell this at a loss for the parts. And if you've been keeping up with, I'm not a big PC guy, so, you know, some of this goes by me. But the price of RAM and CPUs and all that shit is really ramping up because of tariffs and AI production. Like, the people who make the chips would rather they go to AI data centers than to custom PCs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the RAM is a big one. A lot of these companies are signing these year-long contracts. And I know OpenAI is one, although it's funny because financially, the experts are wondering how they're going to pull that off. But regardless, they're basically just gumming up all of the supply, and it's just rising yes. cost.
So that means basically that the new Steam box is probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $700 to $800. Again, that's without all the extras. I talked to someone yesterday, and something that hadn't even brought up is like, is this thing actually even going to come with a controller? Because that's going to be another minimum 50. I don't remember if Steam said that they would bundle it together.
You know, I don't remember either. I thought that they said the controller would come with it, but yeah, not sure. I know they're adding other peripherals, like there's some sort of like antenna where you can hook up four controllers to it at once and play couch co-op and stuff like that, but not sure about the controller.
He's not super reliable anymore because he's become very corporatized, but if you've ever heard of the PC guy Linus Tech Tips, Canadian dude, apparently, according to him, he was in the press room or whatever when Valve was showing this off. He got invited to it, and he speculated that this thing was going to be about $500 also. And according to him, Valve said, no, not really.
Yeah, which I don't think is, well, it's disappointing to hear, but it's not a surprise because it's pretty common knowledge that at least Sony and Microsoft have been selling their consoles at a loss for years because they rely on people buying the games for that generation. And they usually start making a profit about a year after consoles release. Now, Nintendo doesn't have to do that. They can just go right out of the gate and people just buy their new consoles. So, and plus their components are cheap for their consoles. So, but with this one, the Steam box is really interesting because, yeah, it's going to be primarily focused towards people who have a Steam library and already have games in it. So I don't think they can afford to really sell it at a loss.
So much for, you know, our speculation on how well it's going to sell. Again, my number for the number for the Steam Deck was 4 million thereabouts. And I still think it'll come under that.
Yeah, see, I don't know. Like, there's everybody, a lot of people are speculating that they are trying to make this a console killer, but I think even Valve, unless they're just completely delusional, I don't think they would have any sort of, you know, qualms about it. It's just, I don't think they really expect that. Because, like, if they sold 10 million units, which would be, like, that would be astronomical for them, that would come under some of the worst-selling consoles of all time, like the Wii U.
The Wii, yeah.
But, so, I think, because I watched that video by Linus Tech Tips, and he does a very good job in the video. I've never really watched him. I knew about him, but he goes through all the, you know, different, you know, they build a PC with like similar parts. Obviously, they couldn't find everything that matches because it's custom order kind of stuff. They solder a lot of the components, these console makers do, and just to save on space and all that good stuff. So, but they got it. They got one that kind of works like it, and it runs pretty similarly to a PS5. Now, presumably, the advantage of a Steam machine is you would be able to customize your experience with the game. You know, you can tweak the settings and whatnot, which you can't with a console. It's either, right, you know, performance or quality mode, either that way, in that way. So it's, if this could, like this, if it came between $700-$800, then yeah, I don't expect it to sell more than five million. I think 5 million would be, it would be in the high range.
I think part of the reason the whole console killer thing came about is not in a necessarily pro Steam or Valve rather idea, but in the anti Microsoft, anti Sony camp, because they've raised the prices for their consoles and various other and the subscription services, which is shitty. So people do like want to seek an alternative, but if the alternative is going to be just as expensive, why fucking bother?
Yeah, it's just because there's a lot of perks with the Steam machine. Like you said, the online multiplayer won't cost anything. It has a lot of built-in games already, and they've come out and said, now we know about company promises, but they've come out and said that it should be able to run everything that that's currently out fairly well. And it said it could reach 4K and 60 FPS. Now that might require some user end, you know, on some change of the settings on the user end or whatnot, but
yeah.
It's in that video, the Linus Tech Tips, they, in their little Frankenstein machine that they built, they compared it to a PS5, and there's slight variations, but they look essentially the same. I think they're playing Cyberpunk. So it looks like if it's anything close to that, I think it would live up to that promise that it would be, you know, it would run things just as well. And that's what everybody was saying. It's just the components are about the same as what you got with the PS5 and Series X. But yeah, that's when people started saying, well, it shouldn't cost more than $500, because that's what those initially came out as. So, but
right,
that's not going to be the case here. And it could be higher than we even are speculating now with, like we said, the skyrocketing prices, yes, of the RAM, and that's not going down anytime soon.
No, not unless we bring manufacturing back to the United States and make shit here. That will undo some of the damage. Again, it remains to be seen. Valve has not said a price on this or when it's coming out or anything else. So keep an eye out.
Yeah, everything is still very much in flux, because it's the tech world, the market is just, it's getting out of control. It is a huge bubble, and I expect it'll burst, but in the meantime, everything's just going to keep going up.
Speaking of companies in flux, Warner Brothers. We've talked before about, you know, the Warner Brothers insanity and whether or not they're going to be sold to what company. Again, for this podcast is concerned, it largely concerns with the video games from Warner Brothers and how shit they've been over the last few years. But also, before we get to that part of it, I want to, you know, one of the reasons Warner Bros. Is in such bad straits that they had to be sold is because they're in massive debt. One of the reasons they're in massive debt is because they've pumped, no small feat, that they've pumped a lot of money into a lot of superhero movies that have just straight up tanked. They failed at the box office. They've not made money. They've not reached a general audience. People don't care. So they got rid of the old regime, and then they brought in James Gunn and Peter Safran to make a new DC universe. We're going to start over with the superhero shit. Forget all that Zack Snyder stuff. And I believe we talked about Superman here on this podcast before, and I was more positive on it than you were, but I'm not saying it's like a good movie. I think it was like, I think I said it was 50-50. Like, it's half good and half bad to me. The thing is, I've never seen it again. I have a feeling that if I watch it for a second time, I'm going to like it less, like The Last Jedi. So I don't want to watch it a second time. Preserve my good memories.
Yeah, I hated the movie, honestly, and I have no desire whatsoever to watch it again. there were things about it I liked better than Man of Steel, but there's things about Man of Steel I liked better than James Gunn's Superman. So they're about the same for me, both of them. I the only difference is I thought Henry Cavill's better than David Corn. So not that he did a bad job, but that's just kind of personal preference. But I think they just completely misunderstood. And by they, I mean James Gunn misunderstood Superman as a character at his very core. But yes, as we've seen, James Gunn does not understand any superhero. He doesn't respect them. He doesn't like them.
So they showed this week their second movie. We're not going to talk about the TV shows because, frankly, people aren't watching them. The second movie in this new James Gunn-iverse is Supergirl. It's not written or directed by him, but it is produced by him. And he is the studio head, which means every, you know, the writer has an idea. They will go to James Gunn and say, is this okay? And he'll say, yes. The director has a thing, because he's going to be he's on set for this shit. So the director is going to be like, here's what we're going to do. And then he looks over James Gunn, and James Gunn nods his head or shakes his head, and that's what they do. That's how this works. So the trailer officially for Supergirl came out as of this week that we were recording. I hate it way more than the Superman teaser. It's a teaser, technically, because we have teaser for teasers and teasers for trailers. Yeah, whatever. It is an audio medium, right? So you can't see what we're describing. So I don't want to go over the whole thing. I think the casting, the Australian actress Millie Alcock is fine with it. I've got no real issue with her or her accent or anything. It's just everything surrounding it sucks. The trailer literally starts on the worst character, the worst thing about the Superman movie, Crypto the fucking Superdog, urinating on a newspaper with Superman's face on it because he's on the front page.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
That's how it starts.
Yeah, we're not talking about, you know, a little pee got splashed back or anything like that. The stream is going directly on Superman's face in the paper on an article saying how Superman saved a town from a nuclear reaction explosion or whatever, meltdown.
Yeah, he's fighting Nuclear Man. When I describe things as dog piss, I don't usually mean it literally.
Well, you can just tell how little talent these Hollywood directors and showrunners have. They can't even subtly display their disdain for these characters. They have to make it extremely literal by having an animated dog and have an animator make the piss going on Superman's face.
Yeah. Now, there is I'm not defending this, I'm explaining it. There's precedence for this because throughout the Superman movie, Crypto just straight up doesn't like Superman. He hates Clark Kent, Kal-El, whatever. He doesn't ever actually pee on him, but he tries to bite at him a bunch. He's a real dick to him, which is fucking stupid. It's one of the stupidest things you can do in terms of like getting the audience to like either the hero or the dog. And it seems one way or the other, like people who like Superman don't much care for the dog, and people who like the dog don't much care for Superman. I don't know. I know that the dog is a James Gunn dog self-insert. So the fact that he's here again...
That's what I was going to say. Crypto is his James Gunn's insert in his feelings toward superhero and the genre itself. And that's why Crypto is constantly disobeying Superman. He's acting out. He's a problem. He's a nuisance. He doesn't respect Superman. He doesn't listen to what he's told throughout that movie. And he's one of, if not the worst part of that movie, and I'm sure he'll be terrible in this one, too. Because it's James Gunn, he's a terrible person, so.
He's a bad person, but I think a good filmmaker. Just not... He hasn't been for a long time. circle back to that. The movie is loosely adapted from the comic Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, written by Tom King and somebody else. I don't know their names. It's basically True Grit. Supergirl is super depressed about Krypton blowing up, and if you know anything about her history, she's technically older than her cousin, Kal-El, but time shenanigans, so she shows up later when he's already an adult. But she remembers Krypton exploding and all that stuff, so she's got trauma or whatever. So she goes to another solar system with a red sun, so her powers are weakened, so that she can get drunk because she's super depressed. That's literally how it starts. Then a young girl comes seeking out a hero, I guess, to help get revenge for her dead father. So it's True Grit. It's whatever her name is in the movie goes up to Rooster Cogburn and says, hey, I need help. And he's like, no, I'm drunk. Leave me alone. And then eventually they have an adventure. That's the Supergirl movie.
Well, I like True Grit, but some tells me I'm not going to like, I know I wouldn't like Tom King because I've never liked anything that Tom King has made. I think he is a personification of one of the worst things that have happened in the comic industry, and unfortunately it's infected the movies.
He has real problems with women. If you ever read any of his Wonder Woman stuff, there's literally a panel out there of Diana hitting her mother Hippolyta, like straight up punching her in the face because she has a disagreement with her.
Yeah, he's a misogynistic feminist is the best way I think you can explain that. Yeah.
He is also a part of the think tank in the new DCU. I remember when James Gunn said, hey, here's all the people I'm going to be working with. And Tom King was in that list, including I think her name is Ava DuVernay, who's also a real shit comic writer, but keeps getting a job.
Yeah, I think was Jim Lee also part of it too? Or
yes, he's also involved. Yeah. He's also involved. Dude, we don't talk comics on here. Jim Lee should never have become studio head. Man's a great artist. He is fucking terrible manager. A lot like James Gunn. Yeah. James Gunn, when he was just doing his own shit, was really good. Now that he has to oversee shit, suddenly he lost the talent for both things.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just fallen into a rut as far as his directing style or his, you know, studio leading style that he's having to work on the fly, but or if he's just, like, he doesn't want to, like, go outside what he's starting to be known as the anti-hero team of misfits and nobody, you know, all these reluctant hero storylines that a lot of his latest movies and TV shows have turned into.
Are you comfortable in saying that he peaked at Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes, yeah. And if I would say one peaked, I really like two, but I think it's really slow to begin with. I never saw three.
I didn't see three either. I really liked his version of the Suicide Squad, so when I heard that he was going to be studio head, I was excited because, again, I fucking hate Zack Snyder and I hate Zack Snyder's movies, not just superhero stuff. But, you know, after Superman, I was like, oh, man, this isn't what I wanted it to be and it's not what it needed to be. And again, I know he's not writing or directing Supergirl, but it fucking feels exactly the same. She's got a Walkman in the poster. She's got a big fucking trench coat, exactly like Star-Lord. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the director of Supergirl, Craig Gillespie, which I don't really...
Gillespie,
yeah,
yes.
I don't really know much about him, but looking at his filmography here, the only movie... I know two movies on this list. Fright Night and Cruella. You remember the movie where Cruella
Jesus
was
Christ.
Misunderstood? You know, the puppy killer was the misunderstood anti-hero the entire time.
Have you ever seen that movie?
No. But I've heard enough about it.
There's a scene in Cruella where CGI Dalmatians drop kick Cruella's mother off an awning of an ensconce down to a cliff. That's how she dies. I'm not joking. Go look this up later. A dog jumps up on Cruella's mother and she backflips off like a balcony.
I heard that Dalmatians were responsible, but I didn't know it was that.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
And the Fright Night, I assume that's the remake with Colin Farrell?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But, I'm not surprised whatsoever he would be on board with James Gunn's general vision of what was traditionally a superhero or heroine in this case, just becoming a nihilistic drunk, just hopping around the galaxy and getting blitzed out of
her mind. Lord knows we haven't had enough nihilism in superhero movies the last five years. Not nearly enough. Mm-hmm. Not enough sarcastic women for my taste. I demand more. One potential positive, they did show literally 1 second of Lobo, who is not in the comic book, by the way. Jason Momoa has transitioned from playing Aquaman to now playing Lobo. This is good casting, and that, you know, the 1 second you see of him looks cool, but are we pretending, like, are people going to go see this for Lobo? He's not going to be in the movie that much. He's not going to be the main antagonist. He's going to show up, say, Carabas, not Carabas. What's the thing he always says? I'm not a DC guy. He has some catchphrase.
Yeah, I'll think of it. I can't remember either.
It's some pseudo swear. He's going to be chewing cigars and saying, my man, and yeah. Because that's all Jason Momoa does. He plays one fucking character over and over and over.
No, this was a fan casting, and it's a damn good one. I agree. He should have been Lobo the entire time. I've never thought he fit Aquaman. I thought that was a bad casting from day one. But the ladies liked it, so it made over $1 billion. And I
and then the second one tanked.
Yeah. I guess even ladies get tired of seeing the same abs over and over again. But I guess that's like maybe the next trailer of Supergirl will just have Lobo with just the vest and no shirt underneath, showing off the abs.
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise. That's another thing to note. We'd have to go back a year. We might have talked about it on the show. But the first teaser for Superman lets me go, you know what, this was all right. I thought it was okay. It was further trailers and James Gunn never shutting the fuck up that really ruined the, like, internet's perception of Superman. And then people went and saw it and said, oh, man, we should have known based on the trailers. So the fact that I think this first teaser sucks balls means it can get worse. I don't know what you could show me from here on that would go, okay, now I want to see this movie.
Yeah, the only part I really disliked about the initial Superman teaser was him crashing down in the North Pole as the first thing you see. And I thought, that's not really a good start. But the rest of it was...
Little did we know how much he would get his ass kicked in that movie.
Yes, yeah, so much so that my normie cousin, who I went to go see it with, said he really got his butt kicked a lot in that. I'm like, yeah, he did.
I guarantee you Supergirl will not have her ass kicked in this film.
No.
I'll put money on that.
I don't know anything about the story, but yeah.
There's a really stupid scene, again, visual medium. There's a really stupid scene. Again, I explained earlier, she can't get drunk on Earth because of her superpowers. Never mind the end of Superman where she shows up drunk on Earth. So she has to go to a solar system with a red sun, which means she's weaker, right? Mm-hmm. In that trailer, there's a scene where a bunch of thugs who are there to kill the sidekick, her name is Ruthie, are there to kill the sidekick. Supergirl is like, oh, this is going to end really badly for you guys. And it's like, you're weakened, dummy. You're not in a yellow sun universe. You can't just ultra power your way through all of this shit. Bet you will.
Yeah, the teaser is all over the place because, yeah, you first see her drunk on her ass, so you presume, okay, she's on a red sun planet, and then she's waiting at a galactic spaceship bus stop, which...
Because you can't fly.
Was, like, that was probably the most Galaxy of the Guardians shot I've seen. Like, just everything... just is hard to distinguish between the two. But then another scene where she's wearing the same outfit. She's got the trench coat on. So unless she's wearing it for the entire movie, you see her like lifting this huge guy with his giant axe off the floor and kicking his ass. And then she's flying in another scene. And I know trailers and teasers do this all the time where they just take cuts from vertical slices from the movie and just splice them together.
Yeah.
And, she's probably be planet hopping, I'm sure. But, yeah, it's... The only way she's going to stay a nihilistic drunk is if she's on a red planet. So you're going to have to base your story on a red planet like that. But otherwise, but then she's not going to be Supergirl. She's not going to have the powers or anything like that. So she's just going to be Kara Zor-El. And we don't really even get a hint of who she is as a character other than she's just drinks a lot.
Yeah. Another thing I will guarantee you, she will not put on her traditional outfit until the final third of the movie. We've seen the final shot. There's one shot of her smiling towards the camera when he sees the good in people, but I see the truth line, which is steeped in horseshit. Mm-hmm. There's one scene of her smirking. That's the final shot of the movie.
Yeah, and it's probably what drove, convinced Alcott, because apparently someone did an interview with her. And she says She's like an unapologetic mess, and I feel she doesn't want to be a hero. I really admire her about that. That about her. And I think that Clark put... And I think that Clark puts on a mask and is ever...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Everyday life, and Kara won't submit to that. I mean...
I hate actors so much. You know what? Okay, I'll take that back. David Cornsweet, if you ever hear behind the scenes with that guy, there's a scene that was going around from behind the scenes of Superman, the final confrontation we never talked about on the show, with him and Lex. We did talk about this part on the show. That was bullshit interrupted by Crypto. Cornsweet is arguing his ass off to not do that, and they filmed this. Cornsweet is talking to James Gunn and says, don't do this. Let me reason with Lex Luthor by talking about how great being a human is. And Gunn fires back, said, no, that's not how we're going to do this movie, basically. So I'll give him a pass. Every other actor is a fucking idiot.
No, everything I saw behind the scenes of Superman, Cornsweet, he seemed like he was generally very excited for the role. And he wanted to do right by the character. But yeah, when you're just the actor, you're just at the mercy of the director and the writer. So
yeah,
you just have to do the best with what you can. But Alcock, she seems like she's just another one of those feminist anti-patriarchy, just insufferable. And oh my goodness. Yeah. I just got so, God, I just read that just before the show, and man, it pissed me off reading that, because it just goes down to what we've always said. They don't understand, people that make these movies, these superhero movies, don't understand superheroes. They don't understand heroism.
This has been happening for at least 5 or 6 years now, man. And as I mentioned earlier, the last 9 DC comic book property movies, I guess not counting the Batman, lost money. They failed. They went over budget and not enough people watched them. So you're going to just keep throwing money down the hole. That's where you're being sold off. It's not entirely why, but it's a large part why. It's not a non-zero reason, because all your super movies suck balls because you do this anti-hero crap.
And if you're rebooting your comic universe, your second movie cannot be Supergirl. I'm sorry. I like the character.
No, no, no.
I like the character. She's fine. Not the Tom King version, obviously.
I wouldn't put her in top 10. Maybe not even top 20 DC heroes. And I know I'm not a DC guy, but... how the fuck are you going to not have a Batman movie or Wonder Woman movie, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, the fucking Flash, something out there?
You'd have to go through the entire Justice League, and you would get more attention, and you get more people going to the theaters. You could do a Superman, do a Batman. You got to do the Trinity first, Wonder Woman, like you said, Flash. Just go down the list of the Justice Leaguers, and then... you know, if you finally get a footing in, if people are going to see your movies, maybe somewhere down the line, do a Supergirl show. I don't even say I don't think she even really needs a movie. But yeah, that's just way after the fact. It should not be your second feature film in your universe.
This is technically a Supergirl solo movie, because I don't think any other hero is going to show up to help her. You know, Superman will probably make a cameo appearance. But the Superman movie... was a surefire a team-up movie. This one seems to be all her. She can do it all by herself sort of situation. I've been arguing with people on X that it's like, no, it looks lighter. Normies will like it more. Blah, 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 the dog. This will do just as well, if not make more money than Superman. I was like, sorry. No. Have you not been paying attention to the Marvels and Madame Web? Did you not see what just happened in Wonder Woman 1984? Have you not been paying attention to... how the general audience feels about female-led superhero movies. They don't watch them.
Especially in this postmodern, irreverent phase that we're going through in these heroes. Because it's two diametrically opposite tones from what a superhero is and then what Hollywood wants to make their movies as.
Yeah.
And there's a clashing of it, and it's apparent on the screen and to the audience members.
And these things still are male skewing. So it's like, you're just not going to get a female superhero audience. That's just not going to happen. Please, for the love of God, stop trying.
No, and Jason Momoa is not going to change that either.
But anyways, that's why Warner Brothers is in such dire financial straits. $40 billion in debt. So, to transition here briefly, I don't want to talk too much about it because it's still ongoing. There's a lot of bullshit. Netflix basically announced that, hey, we bought Warner Brothers. There was a bidding war for them, basically between them and Paramount. And Netflix straight up said, we got it. They sent out emails to everyone and then all this horseshit. I don't want to get into all the business stuff. But basically, Paramount said, nah, we gave them a better offer. They ignored our better offer. So we're going to go above Zaslav's head, the CEO, and go directly to the board members and do what they call a hostile takeover. It's basically what Tencent was going to do had they not signed the deal with Ubisoft.
Yeah, and somebody was speculating that they were going to try and contact the shareholders, but that would take a while. I'm sure there's a lot of shareholders for Warner Brothers.
It's going to take a while no matter what, because Netflix said when we're going to buy Warner Brothers, we don't want part of it. They're not, Warner Brothers owns TNT, TBS, CNN, and Netflix doesn't give a fuck about regular TV. So the plan was Warner Brothers was going to split into two companies, and Discovery Global was going to split. That's going to happen in quarter three of 2026, which is the summer, which means the Netflix buyout won't happen until then. So them announcing it, we got it, and sending emails to all their subscribers is kind of premature, to say the least. Paramount does want the whole thing. Now, as this relates to the thing we care about, again, video games, Netflix also said we don't care about video games. They straight up said in their acquisition of Warner Brothers that the gaming division was not a huge consideration. It's not important to us. They almost said we don't give a fuck. The CEO, Ted Sarandos, I believe his name is. So it's like, whatever about movies. If you think movie theaters are in a bad spot right now, if Netflix acquired them, they're absolutely going to die. Warner Brothers puts 12 to 15 movies out a year, so including a lot of ones this year that made money, just not the superhero ones. But Netflix is going to put all that on their streaming service or turn them into TV shows that'll be forgotten because they do the fucking binge. It's like you were saying all Supergirl should be a TV show. Well, if Netflix buys it, it will be, and it will dump all 8 episodes in one day, and no one will talk about it next week.
Or they'll do the, like I think what they're doing for Stranger Things right now, where they release a block of episodes, like 2 or 3 or whatever they do right now. And it seems to be working, but that's Stranger Things. That's arguably the most popular thing that's ever been on their platform.
Their most popular original programming,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and it was totally a fluke, I think. I just watched the first season. I haven't watched any of the subsequent ones, but from what I've heard, you can just tell that they were just sort of flying by the seat of their pants in their later seasons because they just thought it'd be a one and done. I don't think they anticipated that it'd be that popular and would resonate and people would love the nostalgia of it. But it's just grown in popularity. They're doing a theatrical release of it too, and it's doing very well from what I hear, selling a lot of tickets. But games are just not a priority for them.
Now, you could argue games haven't been a priority for Warner Brothers games division at all the last few years because of how shit they've been for the large part. Again, the occasional gem. We both like Gotham Knights. Hogwarts Legacy was the best-selling game of the year it came out. So it's not like it can't be done. It just isn't being done. Multiverse's problems, Mortal Kombat, Lord knows, all this other shit of the Suicide Squad game. It's just disaster after disaster. But I'd rather have something than nothing, you know what I mean? I'd rather have the potential for a good game that turns out to be a disaster than a Netflix who doesn't put out games. They put out, like, fucking pissy-ass mobile games.
Mm-hmm. They technically have their own division, video game division, I think, but I'm reading the article now. It's just a referral engine, as they put it. But it's never been any big part of their future plans, because it's just TV and movie streaming, I think, they're most concerned about. I don't think they don't want to have to build the infrastructure to support any sort of video game studios or manufacturing or platforming them.
So in this ongoing bidding war, I guess you have to kind of hope that Paramount gets it, because they've promised to continue the theaters, you know, for people who care about that. Yeah. You and I are largely, I think, checked out on movies. We care about video games. But this won't be good for movie theaters, for Hollywood in general, if Netflix does end up acquiring the master, which I don't think they will. I think it will go through to Paramount because of various regulation, boring bullshit we won't talk about here.
Yeah, it's the Paramount, I think, would be the lesser of two evils, in my opinion. I think Netflix would be the absolute worst one to go to, and not just for the video game division. But, at least with Paramount, there's a possibility that they would leave things just kind of status quo as they are, as far as WB Games concerns.
I said on X, like, if Netflix buys Warner Brothers, movie theaters will die faster. If Paramount buys Warner Brothers, movie theaters will die slower. I don't mean slower than now. I mean, you know, slower comparatively, because they still are dying and they are going to die. This is a stopgap here.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, that's been happening for a while now, and Netflix is a big part of it. Streaming apps are a huge reason, but movie theaters, they're not blameless.
What's that you said about Steam last time? It's like Netflix offers a better product, and it's easier. You don't have to spend as much money going over to the theater. It's just like, they've got something for everything. There's a lot of piss garbage on Netflix, but there's also a lot of good stuff that people like, and from all around the world, too. So you'll find something.
Yeah, in everybody's home theater, you can make a top-end experience for, you know, pretty reasonable price. Get a big screen TV, a sound system. They've become more and more popular, and it's really just not worth the effort to go out and go watch a movie. And it's not like sports where you could say, well, yeah, people can watch sports better, you know, more clarity these days too. It's like, well, that's true, but sporting events offer a much different experience than movie theaters as well. And
I did hear a theory this week that's how theaters survive, by showing more live sports. And I was like, that's not a terrible idea.
No, I think they should do that. I think they need to look into more avenues for making profit and revenue, because they can't rely on Hollywood, but the movie theaters themselves can't just sit on their hands too. They have to at least, you know, try to seem like they're trying to keep their doors open.
To close this out, so anyways, like I said earlier, when you have such bad stuff like the Supergirl trailer, it's going to lead to people not wanting to watch your movie.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
And if your movie costs anywhere near what Superman cost, which was $360 million, I don't care what anybody on the internet tells you, I'm telling you the truth, is $360 million. You're not going to make a profit. You have been making profit on so many of your movies, which is why you're in the hole, which is why you have to be sold, which is why Warner Brothers has failed. This is the end. It doesn't matter who gets it. Warner Brothers, as we know it, is dead. It's over. They pissed away every good thing they ever had. Part of that was Zack Snyder and James Gunn's fault, yes. But they've just had a lot of money sinks. over the last decade, and now they're dead, and they deserve it, frankly. R.I.P. Warner Brothers, fuck you. Mm-hmm. And fuck J.B. Perrette. I don't care who gets Warner Brothers as long as you fire J.B. Perrette.
Yeah, he's definitely at the top of the list. And it's been a team effort on Warner Brothers there. Yeah, congratulations. You basically threw away all this potential, and barely tapped into it, as we saw with Legacy. And they haven't done anything with these extremely popular IPs that they have. And they just let them sit and collect dust on the shelf. And they wonder why they're, losing so much money.
Too bad. At the time of this recording, they also had the Jeff Awards. Excuse me, the Game Awards. That show hosted by Jeff Keighley and his friends from the industry. To give a brief overview, because I didn't watch it live. Did you watch any of it live, Stiz?
Yeah, I was kind of in and out of it. I went and did other things and played some games and watched other, other videos in the meantime. But because there's just still a lot of fat on it.
Yes, it's very bloated. And despite it being bloated, I've heard people complain about this. They still rush through a bunch of games. Like Jeff, or I don't know the name of his female co-host, she'll just come up on screen and says, "Here's this category," and they show five names on screen. Here's who won. Cool, bye. Next thing. It's like they don't treat it with any respect whatsoever.
Well, they got to leave all that time for ad space, since the latest reports say a 3-minute spot costs you $1 million. Oh, my gosh.
He's about the games, though, guys. Trust us. Yeah. He really loves video games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's so, so excited to show you this next ad. Here it is. From Ad Studios Advertisement. Basically, I don't know if you want to go every single category or hit the highlights. Clair Obscur Exhibition 33, I believe, won every category it was nominated in.
If it didn't win one that wasn't nominated for, I'm not seeing it. It's here's one, audio design. I found one.
Who won that?
Battlefield 6 won that.
Because the guns sounded really good. Okay.
Okay. You scoff, but the sound is really excellent. In Battlefield 6.
I suppose.
At least it was in the beta, but especially when you're wearing headphones, it's pretty incredible.
Hold on. Did they give that one to Battlefield 6 because they didn't give it to multiplayer?
Maybe, but as we'll talk later, they didn't really throw a lot of bones in this this awards ceremony this year.
What the fuck is that game called? Kingdom Come Deliverance won nothing. And Ghost of Yote won nothing. Good. And Death Stranding 2 won nothing.
Yes.
Which, frankly, is incredible. And I think it's incredible that none of those got anything.
Yes, and apparently Kojima has already left the States without talking to Jeff, so maybe...
I don't believe that's true. I think that's internet.
I don't think so either. But could there be a rift? Probably not. But.
This is the best friends forever breaking up. It's so sad.
Yeah, and I think it was Arc Raiders that won multiplayer.
Yes.
And that one was kind of surprising for me, at least. I thought either Battlefield 6 or Night Rain was in that for some reason. And Split Fiction was also nominated for that.
Split Fiction was nominated in a few places, and again, that's another surprising one that got nothing, because they gave Game of the Year to the previous title from that guy, It Takes Two.
Yeah, that was one that was, I thought it would at least win something like Best Narrative, but no. No, that also went to Expedition 33. But
there is something, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Arc Raiders winning multiplayer, it just seems like the latest thing was the winner. Like, oh, it's the shiny new thing, so the winner. But it's like, okay, really? Okay, whatever. It's popular.
There is something to be said for how I've always viewed these game awards, because I've joked before, the Jeff Awards, because he's front and center. But I personally don't put any stock into it for a reason you said last time about it trying to centralize a decentralized industry like video games. Like, just how few games are nominated that are not, from America or Europe. Just, like, very, very fucking few. So if you were a Japanese game maker or Chinese game maker or Korean, you're not here. Was it last year? There's a huge controversy over. I'm gonna cut this out. What's a monkey game called?
Oh, Black Myth Wukong. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I was thinking of Monkey Ball.
Yeah, Super Monkey Ball. There's a huge controversy over Super Monkey Ball. No, that Black Myth Wukong wasn't nominated for anything because it was Chinese or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, and apparently a lot of fans, mostly Chinese fans, were upset about that. And I guess since there was like 20 million of them that played that game, it's understandable. But it didn't deserve to win last year. I mean, it was a fine game, but... yeah, it was...
Over Astrobot? You're saying Astrobot was a better game?
Well, yeah. On second thought, now I'm not so sure.
That's the other thing. Like, as we talk about this, like, you know, our next episode will be our end of the year best and worst. Don't worry about that. We'll have a lot to say about E33 there. So, while I don't have a problem necessarily with E33 winning everything, that doesn't suddenly validate the awards because I agree with them. Like... I thought the Game Awards were shit in 2020 when they went to the Game of the Year went to Last of Us 2. I still think they're shit, even if they give it to a game I like. It doesn't matter to me. You know, that doesn't validate the game or my opinion of the game or my opinion of the Game Awards. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes, and for the reason you say, there's very, very limited representation from those Japanese and Chinese studios that are making such a rise in the industry now, but
and making better games.
Yeah, but Jeff is happy to take their money for ad space. No, don't worry about that. There were plenty of ads for gacha games and Weathering Waves, and I think
that Horse Girl game won best mobile or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, that was like the only carrot, pun intended, to that, you know, for any sort of Japanese studio. Oh, and I guess Fatal Fury winning best fighting game, but...
the only fighting game on the list won best fighting game? Good. Mm-hmm. Great, I'm so happy.
Yeah, surprisingly, it didn't go to the two collections and the one game still in beta on there. And the 50,000th version of Virtual Fighter V. Oh, and Bonanza won best family game, whatever that is.
Okay.
And Mario Kart World won best sports/racing, which...
That seems stupid. This is one of those Nintendo tax things, which is like, we have to give something to Nintendo?
Yeah, probably.
That's what I was going to say. It feels like since 2020, this is just my speculation, just how I feel, that Jeff and friends have played it very safe. You know, giving it to, like, Elden Ring and It Takes Two and Astrobot, they've pussied themselves out. So I understand them not giving anything to like Ghost of Yote because of all the controversy with those retard developers. But it seems like it was almost too safe. The show is too corporatized. It's like, oh, everybody loves E33, so let's just give everything to E33 is how it feels.
I agree with that, but I think if they opened it up and it was 100% fan vote, I think E33 still wins it all. I think that's just how popular it was.
It wins Game of the Year, yes. I agree with you. Not every single category was nominated.
Well, yeah, maybe not every one, but the big one, at least. So, but you're right. It's, you know, they definitely just treat these sort of things as kid gloves. They don't open it up as much as they should to the...
Not that there aren't, like, beyond snubs, just bad decisions. Like, first of all, having the category Games for Impact. What does that fucking mean? Well, sorry to use this word, everyone. How woke can we make a game? That's what it means. And it went to one of the worst games I've played this year in South of Midnight. I hate that game.
Yeah, it's basically just white man evil and gaining magic powers by picking cotton. It's...
Please ignore that the two people who accepted the award were white.
Yeah, you would think it was like made by super racist people just given by the just going off that premise. Which if it was, it'd be
pretty
funny.
It's coming to the Switch and PS5. Aren't you excited? Isn't that so good for you people? And the probably most, I don't know if this pissed you off, but, you know, I roll my eyes at these sorts of things, but Hades 2 won best action game over Ninja Gaiden 4.
Yeah, and over Doom the Dark Ages as well. Yeah. I would have been okay if either Doom or Ninja Gaiden 4 had won it, but not Hades 2.
I wouldn't, because Doom is not an action game. It's a shooter, goddammit. These are different categories.
Okay, well, be that as it may, there's not a shooter category, which is actually kind of surprising, given how big the genre is.
Battlefield and Arc Raiders, for God's sake.
Yeah. I guess I guess their thinking is the majority of the time those shooters will just fall into the multiplayer category because that's usually, you know, what they're mostly tailored for. But, I mean, if it plays like, I mean, I like the first Hades. You and I both like the first Hades, but I wouldn't say, like, even if that was up against Ninja Gaiden 4, I don't think either one of us would have put it above it. So that was definitely a
step. But again, you know, we don't do categories on our show because it's too long as it is. Look forward to that one next time, everybody. But if we did categories, you know, I would separate them all out. Like, Doom is not an action game. Doom is a shooter. Hades is not an action game. Hades is a roguelike. So I would, you know, I have my own category for that. And Lord knows there have been plenty of roguelikes.
Yeah, I wonder with, like, there's all these, you know, so many games these days have so many subgenres, so overlapping just, it just seems impossible for that not to happen, because if you made a best shooter category, you would have to put Battlefield 6, because that is one of the most popular and successful shooters of this year. But do you also put it in a multiplayer category, potentially? Or, because you would also have to do that as well. So, yeah, I mean, I can understand some difficulty, you know, as far as the committee deciding what games go into which category, as far as that goes. But ultimately, you hit the nail on the head. It's just they picked some really head-scratching nominations. It's
I think limiting it to 5 per category is also a problem, given how many fucking video games come out every year. This just isn't working, man. It doesn't matter. We'll talk about why people watch the Game Awards, but this just isn't the Oscars. It can't be. It's not working. The Oscars is for California, a tiny bit of Canada, and one foreign film. Video games have come from literally all over the earth. You can't make them all in just one tiny little box for a handful of categories. It's like, I know you and I, you know, play more than the average person. I definitely skew that thing way higher. But a lot of the argument I've seen this week about people being mad that E33 won everything, which is stupid because it's a great game. It's just like, the way you view things is so limited. You have such a narrow scope of what video games could and should be. For getting mad about, like, Call of Duty here in 2025, 2026, hell. It's like, come on, like, play more games. Play other games. There's so many things out there now. So to see the very limited scope of the Game Awards has always irked me. It's like, y'all don't play enough to have a broader view of how good these things are.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at Best RPG category, and 33 won that. But the other nominees are, okay, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, fine. But Avowed, Monster Hunter Wilds, The Outer Worlds 2, those were the...
I like Avowed. No, it is not the best RPG of the year. I'd put Outer Worlds 2 over that. And of the three of them, I would still probably pick E33 if we're going down RPG mode.
Yeah, and just, like, my point was going to be, like, despite what you might feel, you know, in general about Avowed, games like Avowed or Outer Worlds 2, there were other RPGs that are more pure RPGs than those two that could have gone. And yes, Same with Monster Hunter Wilds, that could have, you know, fit into that category. But they may be games that didn't sell like 10, 20 million copies this year. So they just probably just don't appear on their radar, the Jeff Award Committee radar.
Yeah, it really is a popularity contest of how much did this one sell. You're not going to get a low-selling game at the Jeff Awards. This is not going to happen.
Oh, well, South by Midnight probably didn't do gangbusters, but...
Yeah, game pass, so we never really know. We'll see when it goes to the other two how many suckers there are, how many people are desperate for a story about a bitch forgiving 5 people of murder because they had bad childhoods.
But Doom the Dark Ages won Innovation and Accessibility.
Hooray.
Yeah, which, according to the line here, is recognizing software and or hardware that is pushing the medium forward by adding features, technology, and content to help games be played and enjoyed by an even wider audience.
I'm split on this idea because...
Did it have a better colorblind mode than the others? Or, I mean...
You can make the game, I did not do this when I played it twice, you can make the game a lot easier by dicking with parry time and the game speed and enemy damage and all that shit. So there's a big part of it that goes, you're making games easier for pussies and journalists. But it is a fundamental belief, you know, that I do believe everyone should be playing video games, no matter, you know, your age or your disability or whatever. But that doesn't mean everyone should be able to play every single game. This is, you know, the Dark Souls argument all over again. Oh, I have a situational disability. I can't pause. I can't play this game. Fuck you. Then don't play the game. Go find something that you can pause. Not every game should be for every player. But, you know, I do want more people to play games. So you see the issue here.
No, I understand you. And they've made great strides in making controllers that paraplegics can play, or, you know, people that only have one arm or hand or whatnot be able to use. Or even, I think I've seen some where you can use your mouth. You can, like, you know, if you paralyzed from the neck down or whatnot.
But to make it an entire category worthy of recognition and award, it's like, nah.
Yeah, and I don't know if they necessarily mean, like, these games are easier for handicapped people to play, or if it's just you can tweak a lot of things in the game and change it fundamentally. Like, you can in Doom the Dark Ages. Yeah, you're right. You can change the battle speed and the player health, the enemy health, you know, all this jazz, and a lot of more games are going into that. And yeah, it's,
yes.
I have no issue with that. Just as long as there are set difficulty levels where I can just say, I can play the one that I know the developers intended to be as the first experience. And then if I want to, I can mess with it after that.
Any other notable categories you want to go over?
Just quick fire like they do. Best ongoing No Man's Sky. Yeah.
Because of the mod. Well, they keep updating it. And they keep apologizing for a bad launch 5 years afterwards. Like, get over it, guys. We know.
Yeah. Best community support, Baldur's Gate 3. I guess they...
That one's for mods.
They do mods and a lot of gaming streams, so I guess that's what that's about. Let's see. Oh,
most anticipated game, GTA 6, 2 years running.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, baby. Yeah. Look forward to get a three-peat next year.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised Resident Evil Requiem didn't get that, just for how close it is. And
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, so... best adaptation, The Last of Us Season 2. God.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. There is another conversation. It's not big out there on X, of people saying, like, E3 being too safe of a pick and whatever, and Ghost of Yotei, which means Jeff didn't want, you know, the bullshit controversy with that retard developer who was happy about Charlie Kirk being murdered, all that shit. They thought, like, Game Awards were leaning a certain direction, shall we say. But then Neil Druckmann stands up there himself, not anyone from the show, not a writer or director on the show, not someone from HBO. Neil Druckmann himself shows up to get that award for adapting one of the worst video games of all time into one of the worst TV shows of all time. Come on.
But you see the competition, Splinter Cell, Death Watch, The Devil May Cry.
Don't care.
I've
heard it's fucking terrible.
It is fucking terrible. Just seeing clips of it. It's garbage. I hate it as a Devil May Cry fan. The Minecraft movie, which apparently...
One of the worst abominations ever put to celluloid, yeah. Yes.
And then Until Dawn, which I completely forgot even had a adaptation to it.
Yeah, that was a movie that was released.
So I guess out of all those, Last of Us Season 2 was the least stinkiest shit.
It's now a dad. How about we don't have this category? This doesn't need to exist.
Yeah.
They're going to give it to Fallout Season 2 next year. Who gives a fuck?
That would be best. Just completely do away with it.
We don't need this. We don't need Best Streamer of the Year either. This doesn't need to be a thing.
No, I think it was Moist Critical. So it's like, yeah, whoop-de-doo. Best Performance went to Jennifer English, which she deserves it. But then we had to go up and hear her talk about neurodivergent people.
She's an activist with a lot of causes. The problem is she's really good at her job, and I don't begrudge her winning this for Mael, because it was always going to be either her or Ben Starr for Verso, and it just always was going to be, and that's going to be for everything. As again, we talked last time, they should split it.
Yeah, you and I were wondering if Ben Starr was wearing makeup throughout the awards.
Yeah, he had some heavy eyeshadow on or something, eyeliner.
It was really weird looking, so he might be going down that route himself. But yeah, as long as she is not writing the characters and she's just... They're
yes.
voicing them and doing the job. I can skip her acceptance speeches. No problem. That's fine. And
I get the performance. Mael's the best character in that game.
I would. Ooh, I think my favorite was probably Verso, but she's very good too. I think she's probably number two for me. Or Lune. I don't know. I like a lot of them. Best action adventure, which is different from best action.
Oh, God.
It's a Hollow Knight Silk Song, which I think was its only win.
That's the bone throw right there.
Yeah.
After years of Jeff trolling people, was like, oh, we've got something very special for you that you've been looking forward to. This thing. Yeah.
And that wasn't even enough for the Hollow Knight fans to do. You know, you'd think they would.
Fuck them.
After getting their long-awaited sequel for after so many years at a very reasonable price, and supposedly a very good sequel to the first one. Yeah, you think they'd be happier about that, but no, these award ceremonies that they themselves will say they don't care about, they really got butthurt that 33 took it away.
You can't be upset about any of these things because every publication does their own. GameSpot and GameStop already had their joke year awards. IGN and Eurogamer and all these piece of shit publications like PC Gamer will have their own things, and they'll give awards to other things. It doesn't matter. What, dude? This is an old story. Back in the 360 days, the original Dead Island got a Game of the Year edition because some publication called Dead Island their Game of the Year. So they will just put it on the box. It doesn't matter actually who says it.
Yeah, and I've always, that's one of my. It's not really a very interesting conspiracy theory, but I've always thought there was a little bit of, you know, sort of like give and take.
Collusion?
Yeah, a little collusion going on between these publications and these studios, saying like, hey, we really want to repackage this game and sell it because we think we could move a lot of units. And if you could say it was your game of the year, then, you know, that gives you a little bit more access, a few more perks. Yeah, yeah. You know, some less scrupulous writer might be talked into that, but yeah, video game journalists have probably done far more unethical things. We've already known they've done far more unethical yes. things thanks to Gamergate. Which, she wasn't at this award ceremony, but Anita Sarkeesian was at the Golden Joysticks, I think it was.
Yeah, and, which gave their game of the year to the game of the year to Ghost of Yote, so that should tell you everything about that.
Oh yeah, more of a joke.
Again, we don't have time today. I'm sorry, but Stizzy, you have played and beaten Ghost of Yote.
Yes, I have.
You'll have more to say about it on our worst of the year list next time.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be one of the commonalities between our lists. I can tell you that.
Any final things on this? We can move to the trailers.
I was just going to go fast-paced all the ones that E33, obviously, Game of the Year, Best Game Direction, Best Narrative, Best Art Direction, Best Score and Music, Best Independent Game, and Best Debut Indie Game, which those two categories, people were really, really up in arms again.
They're technically true. The only reason that people are bristling is because they don't usually do that at the Jeff Awards. They will split them up of like, if you're, you know, typically indie games don't get nominated for Game of the Year. Or you know, they give that to Hollow Knight or some piece of shit. It's like, that's not usually how they operate. That's why it was unusual.
Yeah, and I think this was just kind of a continuation of some people's criticism about classifying Expedition 33 as an indie, or excuse me, technically Sandfall, the studio, as an indie studio. Yes. Even though they are. They have a very small staff.
They are, absolutely.
But people were saying that it's not fair to call them an indie studio and put them in that category because they get, you know,
their game did so well and looks so good.
Well,
unlike every other piece of shit indie game.
Yeah, that plus they get, you know, subsidies from Microsoft and even the French government, I think, even
were able to get. Yeah, that's another thing that's not being talked about enough. Microsoft, they didn't have anything to do with development of the game, but they partly funded it because of their Game Pass shenanigans.
How much, we don't know. Came out this week that Expedition 33 was developed for less than $10 million, which
there's no way in hell that was made for $10 million. I'll buy 20, maybe.
It would, yeah. I'm really skeptical about that. I want to believe the best about the game and its development, and because it has so many implications on and puts such a spotlight on what's been going so wrong for video game development. But yeah, even I have a hard time buying the $10 million. somewhere like 20 to 30 million. But yeah, it just totally cleaned up everywhere. And good for it.
It, you know, again, we'll talk about it next time. It did outclass what it was nominated against. Now, there are things that we both think should have been in these categories that aren't, so we can't argue that. You know what I mean? We can only argue with what's in front of us.
Yeah.
And in my humble opinion, having not played a lot of the other pieces of shit this year, yes, E33 is better than all those other games. Absolutely.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's why I have no problem. It may or may not be my goatee, but I have no, like I said, I have no issues with it taking being a winner in any of those categories. So good for it.
Now, the real reason people actually watch the Game Awards are not the awards themselves. It's for the trailers. It's Jeff Keighley knew this when he started this building because he started GameTrailers.com. Announcements of new upcoming projects. You know, he's always teasing shit. And as you said earlier in the show, these ads cost a fuck ton of money for some companies. Some companies, if you're smaller, get it for free. Sometimes you have to pay $1 million. I wouldn't speculate as to guess to which trailer cost $1 million. I don't want to go over every single thing because there's some games I just straight up don't give a fuck about.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about the specifics in a second. They got a new trailer for Capcom's Pragmata that got a release date. There were two Star Wars games, two Tomb Raider games, the next game from Larian Studios, Baldur's Gate, Resident Evil, a Control sequel, and probably something else you'll tell me about. So there was a lot of interesting stuff there, even if, you know, I didn't watch the show. I just waited 5 minutes to see it on Twitter later.
Yeah, those were definitely the big things. There was a lot of other smaller stuff. I can't remember it all. I forgot to bring up the list.
Yeah.
I forgot to bring up the list earlier. That's my bad.
That's fine.
But yeah, I do remember all those big ones. Celeste 2 was another one as well.
I'm mildly interested in the Dungeons & Dragons game. It's like a first-person thing where you're a wizard or warlock, excuse me, specifically. I was like, that could be cool. A lot of these, especially the Star Wars and Tomb Raider one we'll talk about more in a second, are just CG. There's no fucking gameplay. And the CG is so good, I speculated on X, like, these are not PS5, Xbox Series X games. These are the next generation of games. Because even though these two boxes are only 5 years old, they're already talking about the next ones.
Yeah, did you hear, I think it was Jason Schreier, so take it with a grain of salt, but he was talking about that Star Wars Fates game, which is supposedly, it's in the Old Republic, but it's not a sequel to Knights of the Old Republic.
No, because they decanonized the Old Republic as we knew it,
yeah.
Disney did, so they're just using the name.
Yeah, it literally cannot be a sequel, and it's got Casey...
Schreier said it's not coming out till 2030, yes.
Yeah, so... That could possibly be PS7 or whatever Xbox, you know, that could be two console generations down the line, which is just insane to think about.
Casey, we'll talk about that first. They showed only cinematics, there's nothing to talk about, and the name came up, Star Wars Fate of the Old Republic. Casey Hudson, who was a vital part of the original Knights of the Old Republic way back when, is the head on this, which is great news. Now, however... Drew Karpyshyn, who was the lead writer on KOTOR, is not involved in this. And you do kind of need both of them working together to produce a great game. Because they've both done things separately since then, including Casey Hudson on Anthem.
Yeah.
And it has not worked out so well.
Yeah, and Drew, like, yeah, he said it. Drew has also done things like that Revan book that was god-awful. That was, so, yeah, the two of them, they seem to work well together, but Drew Karpyshyn doesn't seem to be... I don't know how you say his last name, but he doesn't seem to be in sight.
Karpyshyn.
So.
He is involved with Exodus, I believe, the game from former Mass Effect people. That game's not coming out until 2027, though, so there's no reason to talk about it here.
Yeah, speaking of Mass Effect, it's funny because I thought that Star Wars trailer was Mass Effect because in it, it looks like there's a crashed MASH relay in the background. Like,
yeah, it's a similar shape.
I was like, is this a trailer for the Mass Effect? Because that's been teased before, but no, the girl had hair, not tentacles, so... Yeah, that's just add it to the list of the Star Wars, add it behind 1313, Amy Henning, Star Wars game, Eclipse.
Dude, this is what Disney does. They announce a Star Wars project and it never happens. This is what they do. They've been doing it for movies for years. The other Star Wars thing is called Galactic Racer, again, all CG. But basically, it's the people have been calling it a sequel to Episode 1 Racer. And I'm like, You stupid cocksuckers. There was a sequel to Episode 1 Racer. It was called Racer Revenge on the PS2, and I played it. You can play it too if you go to the PSN store, because it's one of those PS2 games that's on PS4.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And if out of the two, I think it's actually going to happen, it'd probably be that one, because it probably seems like it's much easier and cheaper to make. So, and it had Sebulba in it, so maybe you'd be able to pick your racer, you know, little kid Annie race around as.
Yeah, a little customized. I believe, I don't know if this was confirmed, but people were saying it takes place post-Jedi in the Disney era. So, you know, one Sebulba would be really old. I don't know how long Doug lives, but again, it's all new canon.
Yeah, I think in the trailer, they say something about, like, the embers or, like, the remnants of the Empire or something like, you know, like
yeah.
Yeah, suggesting that it takes place after the OT.
In this era that Disney is stuck in on their TV shows of The Mandalorian and Ahsoka, which is just these like 10 years after Return of the Jedi. They can't move forward from this.
Yeah, and everybody was just hooping and hollering when that the Old Republic game. Was it Fate of the Old Republic? Is that what it's called?
It's called Fate of the Old Republic.
Yes. Yeah. They're like, oh my god, it's out of the sequel trilogy. It's like, well, probably it's not going to happen. The game's not going to be made. so don't get too excited. And even if it did, it's still Disney, for God's sakes. How good do you think it's going to be? It's going to be not good. Be terrible.
The racing game might be good because there probably won't be any story in it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that one will actually happen. And it might just be, you know, it'll be some good fun if you like that, you know, the Star Wars vehicle racing. So, there was that first person Souls-like, Decrepit, I think.
I don't have that on my list.
Yeah, it was one of the first things shown. I think it was actually shown in the pre-show show, the 30 minutes before when it's the good-looking gal presenting him. I wish he would do the whole show, but unfortunately Jeff has to step in, but. And then there was another game that kind of looked intriguing. That Stupid Never Dies game.
Oh, okay.
It looked very, very much like a spiritual successor or like to Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yes.
And the trailer just starts off with like two animated characters or cel shaded, I guess, just rocking out to a guitar, which I'm just glad it's not rap for once that we're getting out of that video, just adding more rock into it. But then they showed actual gameplay, and it's very much in that sort of same vein of like Lollipop Chainsaw or Devil May Cry or, you know, character action game. So that could be. And it's being made in Japan, an Osaka-based studio, GP Track 50, which I guess is a new studio.
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them, but apparently guys from Devil May Cry are part of the studio, so.
You know what's a really interesting surprise? The guy who we talked about a long time ago, he helped found the Yakuza studio Ryogagatoku. His name is Toshihiro Nagoshi. He left for reasons we're not entirely sure of, frankly. And then they, you know, this was about the time when Sega says, yeah, we want to put out a Yakuza game every single year. So he left the studio to go. He was, I believe, courted by Tencent. And then that deal didn't work out, so he founded his own studio called Nagoshi Studios. He named it after himself, okay. And there's a CG trailer for his new game called Gang of Dragon. And damn it, if it doesn't look exactly like Yakuza.
The meme that has been going around, which fits it to a T, is that scene in Austin Powers 3 with the two Japanese guys saying, oh look, it looks like Godzilla, but due to copyright...
It's legally distinct.
We cannot say it's Godzilla. But it could be, but it's not. So yes, it looks like Yakuza, but it's not Yakuza.
It's called Gang of Dragon. What other kind of thing could it be about?
Yeah, and apparently it's a Korean guy.
The lead, yes.
Yeah, the lead is a Korean, I almost said Jim Lee again, but I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But yeah, he's a big old buff dude. Probably the, you know, one like bigger Asian dude you'll ever see. Just kicking ass. And I was looking at some screenshots on the Steam page, and you can apparently like customize your car. There's a lot of different weapons. You can use a minigun and other just wacky shit. So it almost seems like a mix between Yakuza and Sleeping Dogs in a way. So, but yeah, definitely very intriguing. Let's see how that, we'll see how close to the Yakuza formula one that is.
If he gets it, if he goes to a karaoke bar, then we'll know.
God, maybe him and Kiryu can do a duet.
Another big surprise for me was we talked previously about how badly Remedy Studios is doing, and then here they're like, here's a controller, here's a sequel for, or here's a trailer for the Control sequel. It's called Control Resonance. And I was like, oh, so you guys aren't totally dead yet? You got one more thing before you shut down? You don't play, I was a little upset to see that you don't play as Jesse Faden again. You play as her brother who grew his hair, Dylan. She had a transforming gun. He has a transforming melee weapon now. It reminds me a little bit of Prototype in terms of, like, the jumping and the weird monsters, and you're just hitting them with your fists and this, like, big stick and shit. Looks really cool, though.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of juggling in it, and, yeah, different weapon types just based on what he changed it. Like, I think he changed into a big hammer, and there's probably, like, a sword or something like that, so.
Yeah.
It's set in the same universe, and I'm sure we'll get tie-ins to the first game, and, it'll have this, you know, just crazy psychological sort of themes and imagery going on. But
yeah, because Control is a weird fucking game.
yeah, and I really enjoyed it, but I can't.
Yes.
I only played the one time, and I can't quite remember everything that happens because it's mind fuck. The landscape is constantly changing. This one is actually outside; it's not in the in the bureau like the first game was. So, but the core gameplay looks completely different than the first game, so I like it. Yeah, I like seeing that they're actually taking a risk and they're going in a different direction, but while also keeping it in a very, very familiar setting as well.
Do you think with Divinity at all? Is the way of any, I don't have anything to say about Divinity.
I mean, I have not played a whole lot of Divinity Original Sin, which I'm assuming this is going to be a sequel. This is going to be the third game, but it apparently dropped Original Sin for the title. I was talking with you off air. I don't really know much about it. It seemed really grim and darker and visceral than I would remember of what little I played. But I was talking to my brother who has put like 500 hours between the first two games.
Huh.
Yeah, he really loves them. And he was saying, yeah, they're very dark fantasy. Just it's very depressive atmosphere, and he said it kind of fits with it. But even he was pretty shocked by the trailer. It's just gross. That's the thing. That's the only thing I can describe it as. And it's like, because it starts off with this festival in this, you know, sort of medieval setting, like, you know. High fantasy, dark fantasy, whatever we'll call it, setting. And people, there's music, people are having a good time, going to stalls, eating, drinking. But then it progressively gets more and more debauched. And there's a lot of depravity. Like, there's, you see this very, way too realistic looking puke, and then a pig eating the puke. And then you start seeing, like, goblins fornicating with, like, dragon people and just having orgies out in the open and just all this different shit. Then there's these giant effigies and there's this guy inside bound and chained, and they set it on fire and he starts burning alive and you see every second of it.
So when the game comes out and it's exactly like Baldur's Gate 3 and the other two Divinity games where it's a CRPG where you have a tiny little person making turn-based RPG decisions.
Yeah, it's, Yeah, at least the violence won't be that in your face, like, you know, with the faraway camera. But it's a very intriguing tone from Larian Studio, because while I played a lot of Baldur's Gate 3, I really like it. There's absolutely zero question that it is a woke game. It is what it is. It just got a pass because it was so popular, because it plays really well.
And it was so popular, I think, because of those characters, the Shadowheart and I barely played any of it. I'm sorry. I don't know other names. The gay vampire and Karlach, the red girl.
Yeah, Asterion, Karlach, Gale. Will is not quite as popular. But, yeah, it's very much... It's this medieval, like, European-looking setting, but you have all these different, like, races that obviously didn't exist in Europe at that time. You got, like...
Yeah, that's my problem. They use the name Baldur's Gate 3, which is a Dungeons & Dragons property. It's from the Forgotten Realms. But looking at the game, like, that's not Dungeons & Dragons. That's not Forgotten Realms. So, personally, to see them go back to their own... I don't know if they own it, but their wheelhouse of the Divinity Ecru Draconis universe is, like, that's fine with me.
Yeah, I guess if you're, really a longtime fan, that's not really, stepping on too much of the old lore, so it's no problem, but it's just really weird to see, like, a Chinese halfling or whatever, something like that. It's just like, I don't know, I mean, call me racist or whatever, it's a lot of those characters just look like they just threw them in the character generation, just randomized generation, and just threw them back out there because they just look dumb and silly and stupid. And a lot of the themes and a lot of the character arcs and all that stuff kind of follows a lot of the writing trends we've seen in movies, TVs, and games. The difference with Baldur's Gate 3 is you can actually choose to just, like, if you meet, like, a transgender in the game and they discuss you, you can just kill them. You can do whatever you want. So that freedom of choice and just the sheer amount of branching paths, also lends to its popularity. But I'm sorry, I'm going off here, but I'm trying to lead it into, like, this new Divinity trailer, or teaser, I should say, because it's just totally cinematic, is lending it, because the setting looks very much like what Baldur's Gate 3 is. Like, what you go and see in the towns and cities and stuff like that. But as the trailer progresses, like I said, the depravity just kicks up exponentially. And then it finally culminates, and the guy who's being burned alive in the effigy, like, these dark, ghost, bloody spirits start pouring out of his back and start attacking the townsfolk, and they end up killing everybody, which was my favorite part of the trailer. just to see the nihilist, the godless hedonist be massacred. But it got me thinking, and I was like, okay, so it's like, is this just, like, supposed to be an evil giving rise to an even greater evil? Which, that can be an interesting discussion. Or is it Larian? It's probably not them admitting, like, yeah, we know Baldur's Gate 3 kind of had this sort of, like, very gross, very hedonistic, very, like, like, multi-gender feel to it. So this is kind of what we feel about it. We're kind of getting more traditional, but because why would they? It sold, like, a ton of copies, and it did vastly very, very popular well. So why would they change? So my only assumption, it can only be the former, that it's like they're doing these really depraved things out in open, but it just leads to just this bigger evil being unleashed.
It's not just been based on how you're explaining it to me. That doesn't mean they're condemning any of it. It means they're celebrating it in terms of, like, look what we put in our game, like, what, look what we can do. This is gonna be the most M-rated game next to that Hellraiser game that's coming out. And it's like, none of that really appeals to me from a gameplay perspective. Like, how does any of this blood orgy translate into a video game? Mm-hmm. When I know it's going to look exactly like the last three games you made, which were computer RPGs.
Yes, in a dark / high fantasy setting. So
yeah,
I have a general idea. If you're just trying to set a sort of, like, just baseline of what the setting and what potential themes and imagery could be in the game, I mean, I have a good idea. You don't need to, create... arm and leg.
I don't need to see the lady bouncing on the lizard man.
Yeah, I don't need to see, naked body statues out and trying to guess what they're for. So, but it definitely made an impact on the show, that's for sure.
Speaking of gross shit, the worst kept secret in video games, Leon S. Kennedy has officially been confirmed in Resident Evil 9 Requiem. They showed off a tiny bit of gameplay, a bunch of CG, and then Capcom came out and said, yeah, they're going to play completely different. When you play as Grace, it's going to be a completely different kind of gameplay as opposed to when you play as Leon, which makes sense. Because Leon's, more, not just older, but has more experience in this sort of thing. So he fights faster and, he's not panicking all the time like Grace and running away from monsters.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is, I am frankly kind of sick of Leon because he was literally in the last game Capcom published in the Resident Evil series of the Resident Evil 4 remake. And if you want to say, well, timeline, whatever, he hasn't been around since 6. And it's like, that's still not very long. It's like, there have been people in timeline who haven't been in games longer, like Jill Valentine and Claire Redfield.
Yes, and he's been in, while they're not, obviously not as popular as the games, but he's also been in recent animated movies, and also that Raccoon City movie that was supposed to be close to the video games, but it was nowhere near it, where I think an Indian guy played Leon or something.
Is it Indian-Canadian? Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, there's definitely been a lot of saturation with Leon. He's a great character, don't get me wrong, but yeah, there's a lot of old Resident Evil faces I would like to see back.
They keep bringing back Chris, and they keep bringing back Leon, and they just kind of left their popular women by the wayside.
Yeah, like Claire hasn't been in anything in a long time. She was in the remake, and she was in that Netflix 3D CGI movie, but Leon was also in that, so...
Yes.
That's, he's
I'm personally feeling a little Leon fatigue. Yeah.
But it's not surprising. He's definitely the most popular. He's probably the most popular Resident Evil character, if I had to guess, because he was in he was in the most popular Resident Evil game. So.
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Yes, twice, yeah. Now, whether Ada will also be in this game remains to be seen.
Oh, we got to start the shipping wars, dude. If they show Ada, that means he's with Ada. If they show Claire, that means he's with Claire. That's what matters.
Yeah, I've never liked the Leon Claire myself. Just settle down with Helena Harper. That's, you know,
she was the best pick, and then they just waylaid by the wayside. It's the same fucking thing as it was in 4. Ashley's offering you to blow you after you rescue her, and she's like, and Helena's like, nah, I really like this one Asian chick who kissed me one time when she was lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God, dude, get over her. She doesn't like you that way. Speaking of hot women, Tomb Raider had not one but two trailers. They're doing another remake of the first game in the series called Tomb Raider Fate. Is it Fate of? I'm sorry, I've already forgotten what it's called. Legacy of Atlantis, which is a remake of the first game. And they announced Tomb Raider Catalyst, which had all CG. And I think that one's going to be for next-gen consoles, because they showed nothing of something farther in the future in the timeline. It's technically after Underworld, Tomb Raider Underworld, which is the furthest they've gone in the timeline there. So they're going all the way back and all the way forward. After years of fucking nothing, after years of Lara Croft being in every other game crossover, they gave her two games.
I guess they're just abandoning the survival timeline entirely.
Apparently they are tying it in. The remake takes place after Shadow, from what I'm even aware of.
Okay, all right. That's a bit of a stretch, in my opinion, just from like her development. Because
tone wise, yes.
Yeah, that too. Because I wouldn't really. I mean, I like the Survivor trilogy for what it is. I just don't see that Lara Croft developing into what we see like her originally, like the, you know, confident booty shorts wearing gal just going guns blazing, but.
As we see in the remake and in Catalyst. Oh, there's another thing. Like, there's been a lot of problems with Tomb Raider. Like, the upcoming Amazon TV show is going to be an absolute piece of shit because of the people involved in it. And they've already said nonsense, like, oh, it's going to tie into the games. It's like, no, it fucking isn't. Nobody's going to watch your shit show. Like, with stuff like the anime and then the Kickstarter for that board game that never really got canceled with the lady with the robot legs. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
No, I do not know the robot leg.
Okay, I'll have to show you that. I'll have to show you that off air. But there have been a lot of narrative problems with the Survivor, you know, post Shadow of the Tomb Raider, I'll say specifically, of where they've taken Lara and especially the Netflix show and all this nonsense. But I will give you some hope, Sizzy, because when they originally showed the render of their new Lara Croft with a new face model, new voice actress, under her blue top, she had a white undershirt. In this latest trailer for Legacy of Atlantis, they have removed that white undershirt.
Progress.
Progress. To you and me, yes. Not to people who love progress.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I mean. Progress to what video games should be and what Lara Croft should be. It's it's
progress by going back to what made it good.
Yeah, yes. It's yeah, no, it's definitely baby steps in the other direction, or the pendulum, you know, swinging, starting to swing. But yeah, it's definitely encouraging. I would argue certain, you know, features and proportions of her not quite live up to the old standards, but it's
this is the Tifa thing all over again. We don't have time. This is a long show.
I know, but that's why I said it's just it's a step in the right direction. But
all kidding aside, it looks really cool. They both do.
I would say I'm more excited for Legacy of Lin, even though being a remake, you see more of it. But I don't understand why they don't look alike, like the two Lara Crofts. I get it's probably two. Well, two different engines.
Well, yes, because Catalyst is all CG. There's no. That's not in engine. What we're showing from Atlantis is in engine. The stuff from Catalyst is not, because it haven't been built yet. It's like the Star Wars game. It's like, here's the trailer for the idea we've had. We haven't started work on it yet. There's no way in hell.
Yeah. So, it's nice to see Lara Croft just, get back to her roots, so to speak. Now, yes. Whether or not the writers will be able to tie in what she went through in Survivor and sort of develop her into what she becomes as far as the main Lara Croft, how she started. I don't know. I don't think it makes sense for the Survivor Lara Croft, in my opinion. That's why it would be kind of off-putting, just from a tonal standpoint. But we'll see. This everything about this just seems like a just total dynamic paradigm, sudden paradigm shift to try to give the audience what they want, which is not a bad thing.
Which we can't be upset about, because it's what we've been calling for. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It reminded me so much of Halo, because they're, for the second time, remaking the first game and updating the paint and saying, hey, to a new audience or whatever. It's like, hey, everybody, we're trying it again. We're getting back to what made us good. And it's like, you don't have to remake the first game to do that. You know, you can just make a good game again. Like, it's more important that Catalyst is good than that Atlantis is good. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I just don't know if that's going to be the reality, because that seems to be that seems to be the trouble, the problem that these studios have is creating something new that is a step forward in the franchise, but also respects where it came from as well.
Yes.
And the fans that also made that franchise success in the first place. So how well Catalyst does is definitely will be more of a benchmark of the future direction of Tomb Raider. But
I think that's going to have to be it. There's a couple of other little neat things in there. It's just we need more. Even from the games we talked about, it was mostly CG shit. It's we need more. Last year at the Game Awards, they showed those new Sega games. They were reviving their old franchises, and the only one that had come out was what's the ninja called? Not Ninja Gaiden, the other ninja, Shinobi. Shinobi is the only one that had come out. They haven't showed their new Crazy Taxi. They haven't showed their new Jet Set Radio. So the Game Awards is a lot like old E3, where it's like, here's a thing that's years away, and we're lucky if it ever happens at all.
Yeah. One thing I was glad to see was a date for Phantom Blade Zero. It's still still a ways away. Still September of next year, but it's more concrete information than we got for these other games. So
yeah, none of these had Windows. If they had Windows, it was 2026. Mm. I know Exodus has to come out to 2027, which I don't want to talk about it. So it's why bother? And if it had no window, then it's further than that, like the Star Wars games and Catalyst.
I think Catalyst got a 2027 window, but whether it'll...
Did they actually give a number?
No. I'm seeing that in this article I'm reading. We'll see about that. But Phantom Blade Zero looks awesome. It looks great. It showed more gameplay, showed more weapons. Of course, that kickstarted a storm on social media saying it's another soulless Chinese... what are they calling it now? Perry slop? We really got to stop using slop as a word. I find myself using it too much, but screw them. It still looks fun. I'm going to play it, so look forward to that. And then the final world premiere.
Oh, good God, from this disaster.
From the folks that made Titanfall and Apex Legend. is another
Highguard
techno medieval game, Highguard, free to play hero shooter.
That's crazy. That, you know what? That's so innovative and new because there's never been a free to play hero shooter in the history of video games.
What was hilarious is in the trailer itself, it said something along the lines of a never before seen style of shooter or something like that. And I was just looking at watching it, thinking, this is just another hero shooter. What's new about this?
I know that like parallel development is a problem in games, but how the fuck did you not see, after what happened with Concord and what's currently going on with Marvel Rivals, that you're not going to find an audience?
All I know is I'm not surprised they kept it a secret for so long, because I wouldn't want to tell anybody about this game. Oh god,
dude, it was the last game. Jeff always does this every year. I talked about this last time. One of the years is one more game. It was the delisted Fast and Furious game. You can't legally buy that anymore. You have to buy it secondhand.
He was hyping it up so much, too. He was like,
I'm very excited to show you this for a world premiere, never before seen. I played some of it in the back, and it's great.
Oh, my. I mean,
he's so fucking fake. I hate Jeff Keighley. I'm very sorry what happened to your dad. I hate you.
Oh, yeah. He had a moment with his dad, and they left the seat open, which was a nice gesture. But, yeah, I also hate him. I also hate him, too. You could practically see the dollar bills just poking out of his jacket as he was talking about this. Because how much did they pay him for this to be the last one? I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And, oh, it was getting roasted on social media.
And, yeah,
so
nobody no gamer likes this. No one, everyone saw that and said, fuck, not another one of these things. Stop making them.
One of my favorites was like, just go ahead and just file for Chapter 11 while you're at it.
Countdown to server shutdown. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's coming out.
Concord 3.0.
It's coming out in 7 weeks, January 26th.
Oh, it's so fucking dead.
Yeah, it doesn't stand a chance. It's and while I was watching it, it reminded me of another game, and I didn't think about it until, I think, after you and I were, weren't talking, you know, like, we partied up later, but I didn't think of it until afterwards. It reminds me of Immortals of Avium.
Oh,
like,
no.
It's sort of, you know, that techno.
I know it. That's why I went, oh, no.
Magic fantasy. I was like, God, this looks like Immortals of Avium. And
that game could have been so fucking good, and it sucked balls. That is such a good idea, and modern writing and shit puzzles killed that game for me. I stopped playing halfway through. It was so pissed off.
It arguably has worse writing than, like, even Forspoken did. Honestly, it's not good.
Again, all the bad stuff in Forspoken is in the first hour, which is only people on YouTube only ever saw. Argument for another day. But yes, now that you say Immortals of Avium, I'm like, yeah, totally. I totally see it.
Or like Godfall, or just any of those other sort of like, just whatever it is about just mixing up guns and technology with magic. Just
super shiny walls.
Yeah, shiny walls. Bright purple neon lights. It's just, I can't really even think off the top of my head of a good example of the two meshing well. Because most of the time they just end up like all the games we listed, or what inevitably this game Highguard will be, end up as just another one on the scrap heap of hero shooters and extraction shooters and whatnot.
From Wildlight Entertainment, their first and probably last game.
But that was really, I couldn't believe it when they made that the final announcement. But what do you expect from the Jeff Show?
A shit show.
Yes.
Speaking of shit shows, next time we have our show, it will be the worst and best of the year. It'll probably be as long as this one. Sorry, everyone. Because we have a lot to say. There have been a lot of really good games to come out in 2012-5, and there's also been a lot of shit. So I'm going to spend most of the time on the shit.
Yes, and I will. I usually play a lot of games every year, but I seem to play even more this year. I have a lot for every category, it feels like. And probably some I'm not even thinking of. But I'll have to actually write down what's in my top 10, what's in my bottom 10, all that good stuff, so. Look forward to that.
We will get to that next time. But that's going to be it for us today. Stizzy, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on X at The Joe Stizzy, and I'm also on YouTube, The Joe Stizzy, and I'll start getting around to making videos when I get around to making videos. That's all I can promise.
Yeah, stop asking.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on X at Loki Jarson. This podcast is available basically everywhere, though I'd prefer if you listen to it through the RSS feed. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Take care.